This is Radical Love Live, an ongoing series of podcasts and special events where we explore faith outside the boxes. Hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson.
Hey, Mark.
Well, hello, Kelly.
How are you?
I am freaking awesome, as always.
Awesome. So great to hear.
Yes, indeed. And how are you?
I am very good.
Good.
It's a beautiful sunny day.
We are to have an epic flood event tomorrow.
Yeah. Yes. I've heard that we're going to get all kinds of rain.
Yeah, they're saying 2 to 3 inches, and they got flood watches and warnings out. And we're going to see Noah going by in an ark, you know, down the Hudson River.
Oh, my gosh. That reminds me of the thing I saw on Instagram last night. Somebody's passing around that they're using the upcoming solar eclipse.
Yes.
And pairing it up with a bunch of like totally incongruous prophecies in the Bible. And I'm guessing that. Yeah. And the sign of Noah is one part of it. But then they also talk about the sign of Jonah, and they're kind of like they get them mixed up. So
is the whale like hanging out with Noah all during the solar eclipse?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very much like a Paul is dead kind of thing, like finding clues from here and there and putting it all together.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Anyway. So when's your next haircut?
You know, I had one scheduled this week, my annual shearing. That's for our listeners. I usually get my haircut once, maybe twice a year. And then let it grow the rest of the time. But when it hits like 70 degrees a couple times, I'm like, this mop is too much. My barber had some kind of emergency, so I had to cancel. So it is God's will that I continue to.
Yes.
It's also like my beard is always kind of like a barometer of how busy my life is. Like if I can't take like 2 minutes to trim my beard, like clearly I need some time management.
I don't know. I think you just let it go and just be ZZ Top. Go for it.
You know, I could. That's true.
You got it.
I mean, you just audition for the next. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I'm like it. So that I heard somebody just giggle a moment ago. There must be somebody with us.
That's right. We have a guest today, our friend Meg Calvin. And I'm hoping that she's going to help me write a book.
What?
Yeah. She is. I'm going to read from her bio here.
Go for it.
She is an Amazon best-selling author, wife, mom, master air guitar player. Hey, me too. I'm so much better at that than the real guitar. Speaker and coach who helps spiritually attuned go-getters write, market, and sell their Amazon best-selling books on Kindle, paperback, and all. Meg, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for your work in the world, helping people tell stories.
Yes, my honor. Honor to do that. Honor to be here with you guys. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Meg. It's great to have you on. So, wow, that's a great way to kick it up. So I guess I'll just dig in. I got a quick question for you. Yeah. You wrote your own book, right? Was that kind of where this all started? What's the genesis of this?
The genesis. The genesis of this. Yes.
And I now use that word on purpose.
Yes, so impressive. Yes, I felt
the Exodus fully maxed.
Maybe.
Yeah, like Kelly and others, I've always loved to write. And actually, being raised by missionary grandparents, I began writing and preaching sermons at only 13. And so, which is crazy.
That's when you know everything.
Right. So true.
You have absolute certainty about everything in the universe.
That's so true. I never connected that. That's just a great time to be preaching is at 13.
Okay.
Yes. So that led me on the path to seminary and becoming a minister in the Methodist Church. And I chose my seminary to study pastoral care and then curriculum writing. So from age 17 to 32 was on a church staff. And that was the basis of my second book, was that story, that self-deprecating story. And but my first book, it was picked up. I'm like filtering all the dates. I feel when I tell stories, I always like to include dates. I know they really don't matter. But I was a minister when my first book got picked up. And I'm going to pause because there is an important part of the Genesis that I missed that I told Kelly about earlier, which is the pivot point that got me to write my first book was at an Enneagram retreat, an Enneagram somatic retreat in 2014. And it was at that retreat. I'm sure we're you guys are both aware of the Enneagram and your listeners as well. Yes.
What number are you?
Yes, I'm a three with a two wing.
Oh.
And
Kelly,
you guys,
what are you? You know, I just finally did my Enneagram for the first time about a week ago. And I've held off this whole time.
I love that.
Can you guess?
I would like to think you're a seven like me. Yeah. But you're not.
No, I'm not that.
Are you
noble.
A five?
Nope.
No.
Hmm.
You're not that.
Not
are you a nine? Are you a nine or a six?
That I took. I am a three with a four wing.
Oh, wow.
I am an ambitious.
Tortured artist.
Yes.
Wow, that's excellent, actually.
Yeah.
Trying to get it done.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
That makes sense. Totally.
That does make total sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been kind of a big lesson for me lately because I've told this story before when I showed up in New York. I was like, I'm going to be a big star, like writing plays on Broadway and whatever. And a lot of the work that I've done has ended up being for smaller audiences and I've really had to like slow my roll. And it's taught me a lot about doing work and the difference between doing the work and trying to be important.
Mm. Yes.
You know, that, and it might turn out like maybe someday it'll, you know, take off and get really famous, but my work might just be for a small select group. And, you know, I think if that's what I'm here for, then that's what I'm here for.
Exactly.
Anyway, sorry, I totally digressed there. Back to Enneagram.
No, it totally, since we have the same wounds, both being threes. And so, I was unaware of that until this 2014 retreat. Wow. And it was brought to my attention that the church, when I was a child, who had experienced lots of big T trauma before I was age six.
Oh, wow.
And that's when I began singing in the church choir. It was beautiful. My mom's secretary, she was African-American, and she was part of this African-American gospel choir. And then there was me, this little six-year-old white girl with braids. And and so that introduced me to church. I felt drawn to it immediately. I can still feel the palpable presence of a God that heals and knows all wounds from that gospel choir experience. But then, as it does, the church for me met a need of affirmation and validation that I wasn't getting at home, which God can bring good from and God did bring good from. But for me, I was addicted to the applause, and I only felt success if people applauded for me when I sang at church or preached at church. So fast forward to 2014, blubbering, crying mess, and I'm transmuting all this energy. And then I'm asked I think it's also worth noting here, at this somatic Enneagram retreat, there were like 50 of us. Only two of us were type threes, because we think we're great. We look good on paper, right? Mm-hmm. And it was me. I was in my late 20s at the time. And then a woman who was in her 60s and two doctoral degrees, three master's degrees, and she left the retreat. And she was crying. And she said, it's too much. I have no idea who I am. And I can't handle this. It was a cautionary tale for me as a younger Enneagram 3 who was on that same path. And I was asked, once I went to the pit of childhood trauma, the pit of pain, transmuted it, got angry about it, forgave who needed to be forgiven. And then I was asked the question, now, what is something you could do? Like, obviously, you're good. You're good. There's fruit being born at your ministry. But what is something you could do if you would feel pleasure from? And if no one ever knew you did it, you would still wake up every day and want to do it. Like, if no one applauded you. And as an Enneagram 3, that's hard for us to know. But what came up was writing. And so that was, that led to my first book in 2016, and my second in 2019. And I launched my business in 2020, helping other people who, my spiritually attuned go-getters, as I call them, to help others with their books.
Oh, wow. That is a freaking awesome response to the question.
see you. I'm so glad.
Wow.
Kelly?
So we're very much about spirituality, different ways of expressing spirituality. One of the things that I was asking Meg before the broadcast was about the connection between spirituality and the creative act, like writing a book. What is the spiritual connection or expression that one experiences through writing a book?
I have experienced five ways. I sound like a blog post. Five ways that writing a book is spiritual.
PowerPoint slide.
Click, click. Yes, yes. And so do you want me to give you a brief one sentence of each of the five?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Everybody at home, take notes.
This is
like on the back of your bulletin.
Yep.
Drag my pencil out of the back of the pew.
Yes. So the beautiful thing about the authors I've gotten to serve in the past 4 years is they're from all over the theological spectrum. So a boudoir photographer that practices Buddhism, and then a more conservative Christian pastor with a heart of gold, and on the other side of the spectrum. And all of these five things are true, I've noticed. And I just signed my 48th client in 4 years, which is so exciting. And all of these are, everyone has experienced these. And so the first one is, what is when it comes to what's spiritual about writing a book? And this is from my experience of memoir and nonfiction. That's what I can speak on. This might not be true for fiction. So let us know in the comments below. Just kidding. So the first one is that we as writers are already spiritually interconnected to our target audience. And so we see this in quantum physics. We see it in scripture. When I think First John 1:10, when Jesus, this is going to be more than a sentence. Keep it to a sentence, Meg. When Jesus prays for oneness to the Father, that we are connected. And to our reader, and I have the belief that when a writer is feeling a louder nudge to write a book, it's getting louder because the needs of people, the needs of readers who are hungry to be served by that exact book coming out of that author with that exact style, personality, lens, vices, scars, that's why the need to write is getting louder. The book's talking louder because we are inherently connected to our ideal reader already.
Yes. Wow.
Okay. The second one is that, obviously, it's the easy peasy one. As divine co-creators made in the image of God, we were made to create. That's it. That's period. Oh, number three. Is that the book idea itself is a spiritual entity and it has opinions. This is getting a little woo-woo, but hang with me. I have the belief that the book, when I'm working on someone with it, there's three of us involved. There's the divine entity of the author who the book has chosen. There's a divine entity of me, the coach and partner. And then there is the divine entity of the book itself. And sometimes all that we need to do is, even if we can't clearly articulate, this is my target audience, this is the thesis, this is the arc, this is my subtitle, this is the title, this is the overarching question my book asks. Even if we can't articulate any of through the part of our brain that puts words to things, we can surrender and trust it, that the book knows what it's doing, and just take the next step. And I love thinking about Sondheim. Sondheim wrote, as we all know, West Side Story. And but Sondheim goes on to say in later interviews that he hated all the music. He hated the music that he wrote for that. The lyrics, I just hated it. And so it got me to thinking that really, to start, I think a lot of authors, they wait too long until they have more clarity to move toward a book idea. But really, it's not even, we can release ourselves with a responsibility as authors of surrendering to the book, letting it, like, it knows what it's doing. Just surrender enough to take the first step, knowing clarity will come. It's not even your job as an author to understand clearly. Like Sondheim in this example, it's so, the Sondheim example.
Somebody knows Broadway.
Yeah, I do want to interject that does apply to fiction, is that there are a lot of fiction writers who talk about their characters sort of taking on a life of their own.
Oh, absolutely.
And yep. I wrote a lot of fiction in like the 90s, early 2000s. There was a big novel that I was working on all the time. Mm-hmm. And one of the critiques that I ran into a lot that sort of drove me toward doing more theology writing was that I wasn't letting my characters have their own life. Like I really clearly had something to say that I was using these as like as puppets to make my theological points. And people are like, no, these characters need to like live and breathe and move and be be autonomous, like surprise you. And you clearly got a little preaching to do first before you're going to let these guys do that. And I think that was right. I think that there's some things that I needed to tell my story before I could then let these other characters live their stories.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. That's wise.
That's so wise. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And
it didn't feel wise when I got my manuscript back from the editor and I was like, I'm gonna curse you.
Oh, I'm sure you were probably a little like,
but anyway, yes, here you are.
Yes, I agree. The editing process, it can be very uncomfortable. Totally. And also, I am now glad because you have a finished manuscript and two others started on your computer, which is amazing.
Oh, this is true.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true. Right here. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
On that mission. So, Meg, quick. So those are the five. You say that.
Wait, I think we only got three. Didn't we?
Yes, there were only three, but I'm definitely happy to pause because I know I can sometimes be a vomiting encyclopedia.
No, just finish off because that's so we've got. So what's number four?
I can keep them short.
No,
go.
We got time.
Number four is you might have heard in the spiritual New Age world that within every human, there is both divine feminine energy and divine masculine energy. So
absolutely.
Divine feminine receiving inspiration, pleasure, sensuality, sexuality, playfulness, being nurtured, asking for help, feeling the pleasure of writing that we feel. Because to me and to my clients, most of them, writing is like seconds on cake. And it's very pleasure. It's full of pleasure for us. So that's totally divine feminine. The best authors surrender to the spiritual dance of writing, which is they're integrated. There's a time to be in the divine feminine and everything I just described. And then there's a time to be the divine masculine, which is, oh, shit, I have to do end notes and Chicago Turabian citations. Like, oh, my God, I have to trudge through this. And it's this structured. It's the riverbanks. It is rational, it's logical, and it's just, oh, it's so much work. And so there's that dance of spiritual, of the divine feminine and the divine masculine in writing and marketing your book. And the last one, number five, is every author I've worked with, when they, and myself included, with every book, with my two books and the clients I've served, when we birth books, we birth breakthroughs. And so the book birthing process, it affects every part of our lives. And I've had clients leave unhealthy marriages that they'd been wanting to leave for years. There was extramarital affair and it just was in this situation, the client thought divorce was best. I like how I'm defending this client who we don't even know who this person is, but I want to defend anyway. I had a client move to France. He wanted to do that for 7 years and he finally did it. I had so many clients have sweaty palm conversations with someone they needed to forgive or seek their forgiveness. There was conversations on shame that they needed to have.
Yep.
And so the fifth and final part is that the deepest depths of us where we go within in order to reflect and create books, I believe that we also find in the wounds, layers of wounds, that the confidence we're getting in writing our book is giving us the confidence to take next step in healing that layer of that wound. And so those are the five ways that writing a book is spiritual.
Wow. I love that. There's so much there to unpack and meditate on.
There really is. Number five definitely stands out for me. If I go back in reverse order, simply because it's somewhat, it feels akin to, a 12-step experience where you get to that point, especially when you have to start working on your fearless and thorough moral inventory, right? And it's like, really?
Right. And then the question is like, how free do you want to be?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it directly, because you, I found myself over my, you know, I had no choice but to make myself vulnerable, and it was icky and not a lot of fun at the time. But, you know, I am a fuller, richer person and a better human, I think, because of that experience, because it opened me up to analyze, you know, the people, places and things and everything else. So I can see the connection and working on a book, how that would work as well, because you're digging deep. Mm-hmm. If that's what, you know, you're pulling up all of that to put out there. So, wow.
Well, and you can probably associate what Meg was talking about breakthrough with absolutely. What the 12 steps talk about in terms of spiritual awakening.
Oh, absolutely.
Like having had a spiritual awakening. Yep, yep. Now you, yep. You know, share it with the world, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially because when we believe that the book has a life of its own, when people are doing memoirs, especially, even if a character in the book, a real life person, has crossed over to the other side, I've had so many clients be like, pardon me, that doesn't sound very smart to say, be like, I've had so many clients who share things that sound like, I never saw this memory this way. But mm-hmm. when I was mm-hmm. writing it, I literally heard my grandpa say this as I was awesome. Writing. And that's the, oh, wow. I like being the unicorn in my team, because my team takes care of everything, write it, market, sell it. But I'm a unicorn because my favorite part is the spiritual side and working with authors who have a value of service to others and are also aware that my commitment to this book is spiritual. It is deeply spiritual to me and the readers it's going to serve. And that's the best part is the spiritual side of this work.
So can we go back a little bit? So you were serving in a church as a pastor. Yes. Mm-hmm. And how many years?
15.
Wow. Okay. So you put your time in.
Yes.
And what brought you to realize that there was a new journey for you to take?
When the first book got picked up, it opened the door, like it does for lots of people, for come to this conference, speak on your book. And then mm-hmm. I also started coaching with the International Network of Children's Ministry and Family Ministry. And so coaching ministers that work with families to prevent burnout. And in those coaching conversations, I fell in love with coaching and shining the light on amazing people and encouraging them and also asking hard yet catalyzing questions. So I fell in love with coaching. And then after that somatic Enneagram retreat that happened in 14, by 2018, I had started my second book, and I reached out to two people that had the life I wanted to of professionally. They were five years ahead of me, give or take. And I reached out to them and I said, how did you know it was time to leave the church and change your vocation or vocationally evolve? And they both said they knew it, but then they waited too long. And then by the time they left, they were jaded and they burnt bridges. And so they encouraged me, if you're feeling it, trust yourself, which was new to me as an Enneagram 3, to right. trust myself that it's time. And so, I did. And yep.
When you were in seminary, I bet you, like so many, had no idea that there would be this next chapter, right? When you were there and then you were called to the congregation you served, were you in the same one for all 15 years?
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So you were deeply interstitial to the life and well-being of this congregation. It was family, pure interest. So I can imagine that was a hard choice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for you to realize, you know, when you look back on your days in seminary, it's like, this is what I'm going to do. Like so many of us in our life, when we're young, we're like, this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. But that's not how life works. And I speak from a personal point of view, as I was sharing, and as Kelly knows, about what I'm doing with Divine All Along and what Kelly and his work that he does and what you do. That's the beauty of our life. We actually have multiple opportunities to express in ourselves and what makes us who we are and our own divinity in these ways that we never could comprehend until we're presented with it. There's going to be this awareness. So it's like what you're talking about with the book, where it calls us to do breakthroughs. Where in if we just listen and then we act upon it, these things, they will happen. Unfortunately, I think all too many people don't act upon their what they feel, their inclination. They don't trust it enough to make action. So, mm-hmm.
Well, I know that one of the things that held me back creatively for a long time was simply fear. And I don't know that I realized that's what it was at the time, but you know, listening to some of the things that Meg was talking about, that when new writing brings breakthroughs and you're talking about things that are real, some of those breakthroughs can be changed relationships with your community or with your family or with your friends and people that you know. And I think for me, I went a much safer route for a long time, that I devoted a lot of my time to advertising, you know, so everybody's like, yeah, you're making money as a writer. All right, good job. You know, and selling products, but inside there's this fire that's, you know, and it, you know, it made me very depressed, made me want to drink too much. Creativity has to be expressed somehow.
Yes.
And it will. But I can, you know, I think there are probably others like me out there that are like, man, I got this thing that I want to say, but it's going to change everything. It's going to change how people look at me. It's going to change, you know, everybody's going to know about me then. Do you find people facing those kinds of fears and obstacles?
Oh, definitely. And myself included. Getting to a space where I am safe, even if someone else is emotionally uncomfortable. And holding true also that sometimes we outgrow mentors. Everything healthy evolves, everything healthy grows. And also, if someone is choosing to be stagnant and that's serving them at a subconscious or conscious level, that's awesome. More power to them. Myself and my clients, we want to keep evolving and growing. But you're right, there is fear. And I was going to make another point. Oh, are our mentors, and which is, I think, I've noticed with a lot of the people that I get to work with, most coming from a religious background, there's still a voice of that pastor or youth pastor up here that is sometimes the inner critic, and our identity has been built so much on impressing or appeasing that mentor that is now the voice of our inner critic. And so whether it's through writing a letter, if that person has crossed over to the other side, gone to heaven, died, whatever word you want to use, incarnated to whatever's next, however you view the afterlife, even if that person that is the voice of the inner critic, because more often than not, authors can say who the inner critic is, who they hear the most. The college professor, it's my youth pastor, it's my dad or whatever. But so we do unconventional things sometimes to put that inner critic in its place, who rarely ever is even the ideal reader for the book that we're working on. We still need to put that inner critic in its place and thank it for what it's done for us the past 30, 50, 70, however many years. Thank you. You've gotten to be where I am now. But moving forward, I do not need your voice. So thank you. Thank you.
So everybody, let me rephrase my question. Of the folks that you have worked with, do they all have an inner critic?
Oh, that's a good question. No, but the majority do. The majority do.
Because I'm thinking as you're explaining that, like, am I a weirdo? I don't know if I have any inner critics in me. I was like, I just do it? And I'm thinking back, maybe I'm missing something, but I just do stuff.
Yeah, I think I admire people who do that, who are just very brave and like, yeah, I'm
brave, but I just
break a couple eggs to make this omelet. But so,
me. That is me.
But I like omelets. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not a weirdo.
Not at all. Nope.
Thanks for that affirmation. I was getting a little worried. They're like, is there something sociopathic with me? I don't know.
No. And now that I know you're Enneagram 7, I'm also wondering, I want to reach out to two of my friends that are Enneagram 7s and see how loud their inner critic is too, because
ask them and find out. Because as an enthusiast, I would love to know what you'll have to email us when you, after you reached out, because now I'm very curious about that. And by the way, I'm a four wing. So
I found that with the inner critic that I think by wanting to be great, I actually amplified my inner critic. Like it took me a long time to get to the point where like, I'm brave enough to be bad at something and just do it because I enjoy it.
Oh, well, like that's a breakthrough.
Like a few months ago when I played guitar and sang at my church.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was terrible. Oh man, it totally fell apart. And the pedal that I was using didn't work right. And so the guitar didn't sound right. And I was nervous. And everybody afterwards was just like, cool, thanks. Thanks for sharing your gift. I mean, there were some people who are like, you have a lovely singing voice. I'm like, I was playing guitar. But, but that kind of thing is a whole different way of looking at things, like creating things for the sake of creating. And maybe people will receive them and maybe they won't. And we don't have any control over that.
Is a true statement, sir.
Surrendering the outcome, just creating to create, playing to play. Yeah.
Ooh, it sounds like you've had this conversation before, Meg. You're well aware of that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's been so helpful for me starting an improv troupe last January and just going to play once a week with my troupe and just putting words out there, putting body movements, putting accents, building characters, knowing these might fall flat, but man, they're fun to create. And then success doesn't matter. And yes, there's a lot of lessons in that for writing too. Totally.
Ooh. Yes. And.
Yes. And. Yep. Definitely. Yes. Receiving it and going with it. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So enlighten us a little bit. Why did you get involved with a improv group?
Yeah. So I have an amazing business coach. And in 2018, we began working together as I was starting to build. Get to the point, Meg. And and so I built this business. And then it was like, this is awesome. Could I also build a life that I love? What would that look like? What does pleasure look like to me when I'm not doing all the things that we have to do as partners, spouses, parents, employees, and all those things? What does pleasure look like? And so to me, pleasure was improv. My biggest regret in life is I didn't study it in college. And so I started a troupe, hired a coach, and she doesn't take my money, but she coaches us and she's an improv instructor. And so we have a coach, and then I started guitar lessons again. I had did that in college, so I got back to guitar lessons, and it's totally divine feminine energy for me when I'm improv, or I now also sing in a choir. So it's a great, it gets me out from behind my computer. And I like to say I'm an artist first. You were talking about your partner is a Taurus. I'm a Cancer sun, Pisces moon. So we find our self-care in our moon sign. And so many, for 15 years in the church, I had forgotten. I didn't know that. I didn't know that my self-care came in art. And so now thinking I want to grow my influence because I believe my business is building up authors that are going to help so many people heal deep shit. And in order to preserve my energy to serve my clients well, because I have the belief that it's my husband, my child, and then my clients. And they're all important to me, almost equally as important. And I feel okay saying that. But in order to serve them all well, my husband will tell you, I need to be writing every week. I need to be improv every week. I need to be singing every week. And so I need to be, I get my self-care through the stage, but not as I used to when I preached before I found out about Enneagram 3 wounds. Now it's not, please clap for me so I know I'm worth living. It is, I'm here to serve you. I have musical gifts. I have gifts with words. I'll probably make you laugh. I'm here to serve you. Let's have some fun. And improv every week is so healing because there's not an audience and it's still just as fun. They're literally, for me, there's a slight difference because of course you feed off the audience, but it's my self-care. Long story long, improv is my self-care to be a badass business owner.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have some work to do.
What makes you say that?
Well, I just love how you captured that. You asked yourself that simple but profound question, what is pleasure to you? What do you need? And I feel I have done that in certain ways, but I haven't asked myself that question. So I like made a very strong mental note. I'm going to ask that.
it is a good question. Work on that with my therapist quite a bit. She's like, you know, you gotta fuel up a little bit. If you're gonna work this hard, you need to unplug at some point and do something fun. You know, to go back to the like playing guitar in church thing.
Yes.
I do also play in a band at church every once in a while. And I play bass. And that's a whole different experience because, you know, the bass player's kind of like in the back.
Yeah, kind of in the back. Yeah.
And I mean, you're definitely an important part of the song, but nobody knows it.
Right.
Unless you're gone. Like in those, there's no bass. But it's very low pressure and I'm much better at it than I am, you know, playing guitar. And that's fun. Like that is, nobody's really looking at me, but I'm part of it. And it's just, it's different than now I'm going to perform my art. It's more like I'm part of this art and I'm part of a band and we're having a good time together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. This keeps coming up to me. It's a download, as I would say, to say that asking yourself, I have learned asking yourself, what is pleasure to me? What do I need to feel pleasure? This is connected, I promise. Lots of authors and business owners, from my experience and to me personally, they think that their lover, their partner, their spouse is... they treat them like they're their ideal reader or their customer. And they're, it's sometimes they are, sometimes they're not though. And that's okay. So that was one of the best things for my marriage. Probably the hardest part in my marriage is when I was launching my business and my husband was very scared. And as I shared before we went on air, I am wired to be an entrepreneur. We are a different beast. We're not better. We're just different. My husband is not wired to be an entrepreneur. And it was really scary for him. Enneagram 6, loyal skeptic. And so very scary. His value is safety. My value is achievement. And and we're all healing our, anyway, it was very scary. So it was very helpful to hold space for his fear, to tell him I'm afraid too. Ask for his trust, not permission, but then also release him or her, whoever you're in love with. Whoever you do life with, release them of the responsibility of giving you everything you need for your pleasure and then being in partnership together. And there's lots of authors I serve that they want to treat their spouse like this is my ideal client or my ideal reader. And sometimes they're not, but that doesn't mean you have to leave the marriage or leave the relationship. And so they can still be there to do life with and have fun with them. And but that was huge. And I think Garrett would say the same thing, that while it was hard, it was scary to launch my business. Now that it's succeeding, he's very thankful I launched it. But giving him space to ask himself the same question, what brings me pleasure? What do I need? And so whatever that's worth, maybe no one listening needed that, but it kept coming to me to say it. So I'm going to say it. Yeah.
Thank you for putting it out there. No, absolutely. That's the beauty of our conversations. You know, they're unscripted and we just let the divine do its thing and put things out there in the world and let people pick up what serves them. So, thank you for sharing that. And I am definitely going to think about that. Now, in my own, I had shared a little bit about my partner. I don't do what I do for him. He is self-fulfilled in his own faith. And so I respect that. And we have great balance, and we can, you know, so the work I do is not for him, thankfully. But the beautiful thing is he's completely supportive of what I do, and he understands why I'm doing it. Because I want to make, you know, a difference in ending religious abuse and the harm that comes from flawed theology and, you know, in the work from my point of view. So that works out extremely well. And I'm very grateful for that. Like, you know, because I need his support as his partner, but you know, we don't, you know, he doesn't, he, well, honestly, he doesn't want to be in the gory details of this. So, and I spare him that.
And I think I would say the same thing for my wife, is that she understands how much this theological exploration is important for me, but she comes from a very different background. She sort of came from way over here, and I came from way over here, and we eventually sort of met in the middle. But the people that I'm talking to, usually like in my writing and even in some of our episodes of Radical Love Live, are typically people who come more from a background like mine and are curious to learn different ways of looking at things. And she's not really in that audience. And, you know, she's a professional editor, but I don't think I could pay her enough to edit my stuff. Particularly, I think my comma usage gets on her nerves, but also she is great about knowing that writing gives me pleasure and that not writing gives me frustration. And sometimes I don't realize it. I get all caught up in work and I'll be stomping around the house and she's like, "Have you written any of your own stuff today? Go write." I'm like, "Well, I don't want to, you know, desert everybody." She's like, "Go write something." Like she knows better than I do, I think, what's good for me. So I'm very grateful for that support.
Yeah, indeed. Roy does the same thing. He's like, "Go work on your thing."
Yeah. It's a sign of a good partner.
Indeed. Wow. So your coaching that you do, is it always about books, or is it, what are the types of coaching you do?
Yep. So I have everything a memoir or nonfiction author needs to write, market, and sell their book to bestseller status on Audible or Kindle or paperback. And so I have a team under me, but yeah, it's just books. And so I've had a few clients that hire me just as a marketing coach, but only one of those was a non-book client. So the other 47 were books. Yeah.
So, you know, your space.
I love it.
Wow. That's very clear.
Well, and in line with this season's theme about taking action, is being very specific about what you do is a great way to take action. You know, there's people that have desire to, you know, do something in the world. Being very specific, like, this is what I do in the world.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a good foundation for taking action.
Oh, to be sure. So are you seeing a trend in the folks that you are connecting with? Like, as far as style of writing or their topics, or is there deconstruction going on? Because there's quite a bit of books out in that space. What are you seeing?
There is a shift. There has been a shift. And so when I first started, I was working mainly with other ministers or recovering holy rollers, as I called them, or counselors. And now there's a shift to working. I'm not really answering your question, but now working more with people that a book is a lead magnet for their larger business, whether it's they're a business owner, they're a coach. Or they have an umbrella under their personal brand. That is, I do a podcast, I do online courses. Now I also want a book as a lead to serve my people well. And so that really answers your question. So I'm wondering about.
I think you are. Yeah, because I mean, I was asking, are you seeing themes and topics come to you that are in particular? But you know, you answered the question of, again, reflecting on your clients who comes to you. So for the purpose that they do.
There's been a theme of trauma. There's a theme of overcoming childhood trauma or church trauma. And I track that. I call that in my, I always ask, as my business has grown, I sit with a question of, should I take the word spiritual out of social media bios? And I take it to my business coach and we're both like, no, because that's what you love most. And so my bio could say, I help writers write, market, and sell their Amazon bestselling books. That is what I do. But the part that I love most is the spiritual side, that doesn't have to be just topic. It has to be with the care of the client too, and nurturing them spiritually. But so, yeah, I call in a lot of people who have overcome some shit and God has healed some deep wounds. And now, whether it's transformational nonfiction or memoir, they're a trusted guide from the trenches. As Natalie Boltz Weber says, they're ready to teach not from their wounds, but they're ready to teach from their scars. And I, as crazy as it sounds, I love it. I love writing about heavy stuff that God has healed, and now we're ready to serve other people.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm curious, given the market out there, that there are so many people, and a lot of people that we know are writing books and getting them out there. For somebody who looks out there at the market and says, oh, my story's probably already been written. There's so much out there. What could I possibly add to the mass of written word out there today?
Oh, you want me to answer that?
Yeah. What would you say to somebody who came along and was just, you know, sort of looking at their shoes going like, well, I don't know, you know, it's probably already been said.
I was just getting carried away by you talking. I was just listening in total listening mode. Okay, back to interviewee mode.
Kelly and his charismatic voice.
Yes. Oh, so no wonder you have a podcast. Yes. Yes.
Midway through life, sure.
Yeah. Now we're getting flushed. Let's let Meg answer the question.
Okay, fair enough.
So I have yet to visit with an author who doesn't want to help other people with their book. And I can feel it on the sales, the expiration call. I have yet to work with everyone I work with. They are beyond humble, and I get to give them more confidence. And, but their main priority is, I really want to help people with this book. And I wish I would have had this book 10 years ago. And that's why they're writing. And yeah, so yeah. I would say if that's someone's motive, then they really need to write the book, because as I said 5 hours ago when I was long-winded, the book is speaking up to them, because the need for that book in the ideal reader, that need in that reader is growing. They're getting hungrier. They're getting more desperate for it. And so, and who cares if there is 5 books that are also about religious deconstruction? Those books are not curated the same as yours. And they're not definitely not in your authorial voice, your style, your frequency. And like I said earlier, they're different. The author has different scars that they're teaching from. It's not the same book. And yeah, that's what I believe. And we can trust that advice. Because the only reason I would say not to trust that advice is if someone didn't want to help other people with the book. But since that is your motive, and the person listening to this, knowing your audience, it's their motive too, then trust it, because desire to serve is there because of the needs are getting louder. And we know that energy follows thought.
Beautifully said.
Yeah, and that's a very different motivation than, I'm noticing a certain trend in writing right now, so I want to take advantage of it so that I can make some money off my book.
Yes, yes, definitely, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. It's in a weird space. I'm in a weird space right now because our team, we know how to manipulate the metrics on Amazon on the back end for keyword research and category research. We could make a shitty book an Amazon bestseller. We don't. We're people of integrity, but we know the system well enough. We could do that, and we could market a shitty product and get it out to the masses, but we don't. We make sure that it's a totally aligned book with the author, totally aligned with the needs of the reader, and it was just, the pages ooze with the pleasure of the author. That sounded weird, so sorry, but the frequency of the book is so aligned with the author, and it's formatted in a way that is highly readable, relatable, retainable, highly marketable, and then we use the system to get it to bestseller and market it. But it's a weird place that we literally do know how to make a shitty book a bestseller and to get it out to lots of people. We don't, though, but we could. But we don't.
Thank you.
Yes.
Enough of that's already happening anyway.
Right.
That's true. There's a lot of stuff out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we have just a few minutes left, and I want to make sure that we
cover, anything that you're thinking, okay, we didn't talk about this that I'd love for us to discuss. Is there anything? It's your turn to ask us a question, or anything that's about what your, any projects you've got going on you want to share with the world through our conversation today.
Yeah. Kelly and I visited a little bit about where do I see spirituality heading? And this yeah. applies to authors. I've been yeah. very touched, very blessed. Use the church word blessed. I've been very blessed by discovering the gospel of, so the Gnostic gospel. So Mary Magdalene, especially Thomas, Philip, and there is a theme in those gospels. I don't know why I added an extra syllable in there. Gospels. There's a theme in there that is coming home to trusting oneself as a divine co-creator. Yeah. And I feel a lot of, I'm excited about that. That is that the volume of that is being turned way up, especially for writers, because I feel that we struggle. We can struggle, as you were saying earlier, Kelly, we can struggle with, can I say this in my book? Well, if people don't like it, will they reject me? And then I'll be alone. And and so there's this, sometimes people write, I'm guilty of this. and I do this exercise with authors. There'll be a hard chapter to write. And we'll write one version of the chapter that's the author imagining there. And then after meditation, we're in head and heart space that everyone they love, everyone they're worried about disappointing, totally supports them and loves this chapter, and write it that way. And then we write the chapter from a space of your youth pastor is going to stop following you on Facebook after this chapter's done. And then as the writer writes, he or she or they tap into, how did I feel in my body when I wrote? Did it come out quicker when I wrote? Which one did I just enjoy writing more? And it usually is the first one. And so then we realize, okay, awesome. We're going to use that chapter, that version. But we also, there's a chance that you're going to write this letter to this relative or youth pastor, and they're still not going to support the book. How can you take radical responsibility as a divine co-creator and self-source your own safety and unconditional love through the power of the divine, and be okay, even if that youth pastor goes unfollow? And so landing the plane, I love that Mary Magdalene, her gospel is just blowing up right now, and that ability of, I'm going to trust myself and my pleasure, because pleasure is not dirty or sticky. Pleasure is good. It's a gift from God. And we can trust it in our service to people too, because when authors do what brings them pleasure in their work, it makes them magnetic. It makes their brand magnetic, and it pulls in the ideal reader that God made them to serve. And I'm going to land the plane there.
Wow. What a boom. Joyful proclamation. Right there. I love that.
All right.
So Meg, if there's somebody listening to this who's now like super inspired, like, okay, I got to write my book, where can they find you?
Yes. On Instagram at Hey Meg Calvin. And then if your listeners want, I have a free training that is 3 ways to make marketing your book more fun and less frustrating. And they can get that at megcalvin.com.
Excellent. And we'll put those links in the notes for the podcast as well.
Yes, we will.
Well, I think we're just about at time, but Meg, we really want to thank you for being here today. I've gotten a lot out of this.
Yeah, great conversation.
I hope our listeners have too. I'm feeling inspired.
All right. I think there's a few nuggets. Yep. So, woo-hoo! Meg, thank you very much.
It's an honor. Again, I can't say that enough. It's such a fun space you guys have on your show. So thank you for letting me join the fun.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Look forward to crossing paths with you again. All right, Kelly, thank you very much for a great episode.
You too. Thanks, Mark.
All right, be well.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Radical Love Live, co-hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. All rights reserved. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and other popular podcast platforms. Go to radicallovelive.com to learn more about us, watch recordings of our live events, and listen to our podcast.
We also invite you to check out what Kelly and Mark are doing by going to our websites. Find Kelly at kellywilson.com and Mark at markdilcom.com. This is Radical Love Live, where we explore faith outside the boxes.